Welcome to the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast, a show designed for brand new sales reps working in the world of tech sales. I'm your host, Neil Buyan, and I'm going to be taking you on a journey on the SDR Disco Call Vidcast and Podcast. Did you know that you can watch this show live with the guests on YouTube? This show is available on YouTube at happyselling.io. Hello, listeners, watchers, subscribers, and fans of the SDR Disco Course Show. Here we are with another chapter in 2024, and thank you for joining us. If this is your first time joining, as you've probably heard for the people that already watch this sort of stuff, this show is about the world of sales, development, and tech sales. So in tech sales, think about software that people buy in businesses. And within sales development, think about the great people that get people interested in this software and then help generate sales cycles. Then they hand over to their counterparts to then close. And these are the people that I love because, you know, without any pipeline, you ain't got a lifeline. So these people are very important. And what I like to do is interview these great people that work within this profession to figure out how did they get into this? What insights can they share to either inspire or motivate you in this profession? And my name is Neil Buyan, your host. Quick plug, if you're listening to this in your local podcast platform, make sure that you give us a rating and share this. And if you're watching this on YouTube and you're a visual type of person, then make sure that you like, comment, and subscribe down below. So the guest that we have on today, he's been rowing his way into my life and I really love it. So this person, I've had the privilege of actually coaching them as their sales coach, and I've seen this person go from strength to strength, and I always love catching up with them. If anything, they've got the mojo, they've got the motivation, and they get me hyped and pumped. So without further ado, guest, could you tell us, who are you? Where are you based in the world? And where do you work?
Thank you for that intro, Neil. That was very flattering. Yeah, my name's Tom Portnan. I'm an SDR at a company called Kefron, and I'm based just outside of London.
Awesome, Tom. Well, welcome aboard, Captain, for coming on the show. So, Tom, something that I like to ask my guests, outside of the world of sales, what do you like to get up to? What are your passions, hobbies, and interests? Because you've got some cool ones.
Yeah, so headlined big sports guy, all kinds of sports. I play sports since I was sort of 8 years old, everything from cricket, football, athletics, and my most recent venture for the last 5 or 6 years has been rowing. So picked that up at uni and it's basically consumed my life for, yeah, the last 5 years.
Love that. And we're definitely going to be diving into this because, you know, this type of lifestyle is very demanding and you have to kind of balance things up with, you know, training and also with work life. And to kind of bring it back to Kefron, to give us our audience a bit of context, what does Kefron do at a high level? And what are the typical job titles that you're speaking to on a daily basis, Tom?
Yeah, so Kefron is a wider company that provides a few different solutions, but I work in Kefron Digital, which is an accounts payable automation solution. Awesome. So accounts payable is the processing of supplier invoices. So when a company owes another company money. Without any tech, it's a pretty manual process, takes a lot of time. So the plugin solution that you plug into your finance system and it kind of takes away a lot of those manual tasks. It's used by obviously accounts payable teams, but typically I'll be speaking to anyone from financial controllers all the way up to CFOs, P2P transformation consultants, and anyone kind of in that space.
All right. Well, thank you very much for laying the land for us there, Tom. And what we like to do as for our returning listeners and watchers is we like to go to our guests' LinkedIn profiles. And what we always do is we'll always share their LinkedIn profile within the show notes or within the description on YouTube. So if anything floats your boat, Neil's coming with the puns today, with Tom, feel free to reach out, connect, and feel free to pick his brain. But Tom, if we're looking at your career, it's been quite a colourful one. So if we go like way back in the day, you've worked within retail and things such as Sainsbury's, you know, you've been the president of the University of Surrey Boat Club. You've been a business intelligence analyst at Travelport. And obviously, we've been working together whilst you've been at Kefron for the last 8 months. But in your own words, Tom, can you take us back to way back in the days? How did Tom Fortnum get into sales, and what was that journey getting to where you are today, sir?
Yeah, so getting into sales, if I take it way back, my dad actually said to me when I was like 10 that he reckons I'd be a good salesman because I just always asked him questions and was really confident and outgoing. But then I parked that for 10 years. and picked it back up when I was actually at Travelport. So as a business intelligence analyst, I was working to support the sales team as part of my role, by kind of providing them with a dashboard that they can go onto for insights into the market and all of that jazz. And we produced a new dashboard as the business intelligence team, and I effectively ran a demo to. I didn't know it at the time, but I was running a demo to the sales team. And I really enjoyed that. That was one of my like biggest takeaways from my time at Travelport. And kind of that, well, for me, that sales team were my customers. So
yeah.
To have like a customer facing role, like, I really enjoyed that. So when I finished up my time at Travelport, because that was a temporary contract, I could have gone back into a similar role, but I also on the side started looking into sales and what that looks like. So it was never, I want to be an SDR. It was like, I want to get into sales. And that was kind of what naturally came about.
I love that. Thank you very much for sharing. So there's quite a few things I'd like to kind of pick upon that I heard there. So like at age 10, your dad said, you ask a lot of questions. I think you should get into sales. Just out of curiosity, does Dan have any connections to sales, or like what was his version of sales when he was talking about it?
Well, he runs a home improvements company, a small home improvements company in my hometown, Arbra. So he's obviously dealt with salespeople before and sold himself as sort of like when he was early on as well. So yeah, although I imagine he was probably thinking more like a car salesman with a C1 and stuff like that. Probably not SaaS.
Yeah, I love that. And that's really interesting to hear. So, you know, like within Travelport, being that business intelligence analyst, you were, like you said, you were providing data and insights to the sales team. So you were supporting them. And I think I kind of said, like, when we first met in coaching, I used to work within kind of like customer support. And my job was to, you know, support the salespeople before I actually got into sales. And I just got annoyed with them so much and I thought I could do a better job. That's why I kind of got into sales. So Tom, a question that I'd also like to ask is, you know, being a business intelligence analyst at Travelport, your job was to support the sales team, like providing them data and insights. And you obviously weren't working in sales yet, but what was that relationship like and that experience and like kind of what was going through your mind whilst you was like helping sales team?
Yeah, so I enjoyed it. Definitely enjoyed it. I was on placement during my time at university there as well and enjoyed it. But it was a little bit slow paced for me. And there was a lot of time spent sort of on my own in spreadsheets. So yeah, again, enjoyed it. But I always thought that it was those human interactions that I enjoyed and what they were doing and the topics they were discussing when I joined their calls. They excited me more than kind of what I was doing.
I love that. And thinking back when I used to work in support, in my early career before I joined into sales, I remember being within central London. Holborn is where I was at. I remember sitting in a desk for a company called Estates Gazette, and I remember my boss, Toby Phelps, he was like the head of sales, very well-spoken gentleman, super nice dude. And there was a bank of all these other salespeople that just had this energy, had a little bit of bravado, a little bit of egos within them, but they were confident as hell as to when they were like quoting deals on the phone, and like they would get up on a bank of eight people clapping their hands when they got the contract. And I just used to sit there as a sales support guy who used to run reports, dashboards and all of that stuff, and said, wow, they're so cool, they're like famous people to me, because I wanted to get in sales, but I just didn't have the confidence there. But what was it like watching salespeople, and like what was going through your mind? Because as you said, that looked a bit more interesting compared to what you were doing. But what was going through Tom Fortner's mind when you were working with them?
Yeah, it was definitely nothing like what you described. This is like a I think 4,000 employee company. Like, it's really big. To be honest, I don't actually know really what they were even selling as their part, as their part of the function. I just know what I needed to help them with. But that was a far more calm Teams call with people from all over the world. They didn't really delve into the numbers too much. So yeah, I definitely didn't have that experience with watching that sales team.
Okay, cool. So, you know, moving on from Travelport and looking at the world of Kefron, what was that experience like looking for Kefron, interviewing? And yeah, because a lot of our listeners, to give context, some of our listeners and audiences are thinking about joining tech sales and they're looking at their startup. So they want to hear about, like, how did you find that company? What was that interview life like? Like, yeah, walk us through like the journey to Kefron.
Okay, yeah. So the first interaction I had, any sales interview or any role, was through a company called Knit. So to kind of make it simple, you can think of them as recruiters, but when you're hiring SDRs with no experience, it's quite a big gamble for a company. So you're picking up someone that's never been in sales. They've probably got some experience in some other company, but it's a big gamble because they could be pretty awful. I guess the value that Knit are bringing to companies are they're saying that we'll do the hiring, but we'll also vet them with their professional experience and train them. So I applied for Knit to join their program, and they gave me a call and I forgot who they were. I thought it
was hi.
I thought it was probably a business intelligence role or something calling me. And then they started talking about sales. And they did a quick interview on the phone and got me into one of their courses. So after work, 4 or 5 days after work, and spend sort of 90 minutes, 2 hours in a call, and they explain what the SDR role is. They teach you some of the core skills, and they do some like cold call practice as well.
Oh, cool.
So it's actually really, really easy for me to kind of get that initial interaction with sales because they'd set it up so brilliantly.
Yeah. I love that. And then, so like, they give you a call back. You remember who the hell they are. They give you like an insight as to what these sales roles are. They give you some coaching, training, and support towards that role. And then how did it come down to the selection of Kefron, and what was that journey like?
Yeah, so finished up with their training. And then what they start to do is put roles in front of you and say, we'd like to put you forward for this. I think I had three in front of me, including Kefron, and made it to final stage for Kefron and another company. That was a 3-interview process. Because at this point, they've hired from it before. They probably trust them enough to, you don't need to do much more than 3 interviews. But yeah, my first one was with the SDR manager, Adam. And that was a sort of half an hour call. Why do you want to get into sales? He got a good idea of what I was about. Then I went through and spoke to the head of sales, Jimmy, and much of the same. And then they liked me enough to bring me in for a final interview in person in the office, where I had to do a bit of prep before and basically finding some prospects and telling them why I found them. And yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for sharing that insight. I know that's going to be super useful for our audience. And maybe another question for the audience as well. I get a lot of people coming up to me saying, Neil, I want to break into tech, but I have no sales experience. I'm seeing a lot of these influencer people on LinkedIn, and it's a little bit intimidating. And similar to yourself, where you didn't really have the sales experience, and you know, somebody's offering you a role, and you may be thinking, I don't know if I can do this sort of stuff. What advice would you give to the person that doesn't have the experience and is thinking about applying to?
Yeah, so I mean, I got some advice before I went to uni, which probably most people get the same advice before they go to uni, which is just say yes to everything to start with. Then I never really stopped with that advice. And I kind of like, if I wanted to go and do something, then I'd say yes and try it. And like, I mean, like if I started sales and I really, really didn't like it, then like who cares? Which is on my floating rock, right? I'd say get out there, speak to someone who's been in it before to get an idea of what it's like. I mean, if they're listening to this podcast, they're probably doing some of that already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, just apply. Like, there's no, I mean, the interviewers and stuff should pick up if you're going to be right for sales or not. You're not going to get a job if you're not kind of suited to it.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. And I'd agree, like, you know, that yes mentality, I remember it, like, when I was offered my first sales job. I was reading a book at the time called The Secret by Rhonda Byrne. So it's like a motivational book and the laws of attraction and all of that. And it was just like the power of yes. I remember when my sales director, Jonathan, said, Neil, would you like a job within our sales team? I was like, I'm shit scared. I don't know how this is going to pan out. I'm just going to say yes. And a lot of doors open when I kept saying yes. As I've grown older, I've learned to say no to a lot of things right now when I know it doesn't serve me, right? But I think, you know, just giving it a shot, going through that experience, going for the interviews, that's what will build your confidence the more that you do it. Because prior to getting into that job at Proctor Street, I remember I was actually applying for to become a lettings negotiator. I was looking to get into like trying to do renting and properties and get, because I saw them earning a shit ton of cash, and I thought, yeah, I want to get that. And I went for 15 interviews and I got rejected from all of them because they just said I didn't have enough sales experience. But one guy said, maybe work in a support role, learn how they do sales, and then maybe go for it. So that was the best advice I ever got. But I think, as you similarly put, do a little bit of research, speak to people that are already within that company, see what's going on, like, why did they join? What have they learned? What was their career path like? The more knowledge you have on something, the less control it has of you when it comes to fear and nerves and whatnot, right? So I love that. And then obviously, when you joined Kefron, we had the beautiful opportunity to meet as well. And I remember coming into the first Zoom session and this was your first SDR job. What was the first couple of weeks like as an SDR, like onboarding, learning about a product and shit, we need to cold call these people in finance? Like, what was that onboarding experience like for you, Tom?
Yeah, I knew pretty quickly that I'd made the right decision, I think. Kefron, there is like quite a big onboarding process program. And as part of that, you meet everyone in the team. So it's not a huge sales function. There's 10 of us in the team. And each one of your modules you'll do with someone else. So okay. Whether it's an AE or like head of sales or your SDR manager, you kind of get to go meet everyone and pick their brains. So I thought that was really, really good to start with. First day was pretty much setting up the tech. And then second day, 9:30, got on the phones, which was fun. I thought that was a great, I'd definitely do that again.
I love that. And obviously we get to catch up once a month. And you know, there's been some tough points where you've had to like change strategy, or you have to learn about how you're going to reach out to your prospects, and you're working alongside your colleague Finn as well. What is the transformation of Tom being like? So being that newbie and now, you know, as you alluded to, like one of the top performers in the team, how has that journey come about? What have been the learnings of, you know, growing into this SDR role, Tom? What's that been like for you?
Yeah, so kind of coming from such a large company as Travelport into a much, much smaller company, I've learned to be pretty adaptable. Like the process changes quite often. And I think it's the same. I think I've seen it the same as with most sales teams, is that the market changes, what received well changes. And I think sort of week on week, I'll be tweaking my process and how I'm trying to book meetings. And yeah, definitely getting better at it.
And I've seen it change. Like, I think, like, sometimes without going into the ins and outs of our coaching conversations, but, you know, learning a startup's fast-paced environment, the constant changes of strategy, how we're going to go after, what we're going to be talking about, how we're going to approach our prospects. And I remember, like, sometimes it can be quite overwhelming and it can be very stressful because, you know, we're not used to that. And sometimes I do advise, you know, some of the SDRs that I'm working with, there are three types of tech companies you could join. There could be startup mode, where there aren't really much rules. It's kind of roll your sleeves up and it's try lots of different things, fail a hell of a lot in quick succession. Then you come to a scale up, which is, you know, a bit more structured. There's a bit more processes, there's more definition. And then, you know, you have enterprise ready, where, you know, got big logos, everything established and all of that. But Tom, I know it's not for everyone, but when you're coming into that startup space, you're new into this role, shit's changing on a regular and you can lose your head. What advice would you give to that person who's thinking about, oh, I don't know if this is for me, or Why is it always changing? Like, I'd like you to give us a bit of an insight as to how crazy it can get, but how you can keep yourself grounded.
Yeah, so I think Hackathon is quite a big startup. It's probably shifting more towards scale-up now. That's kind of a transition phase we're going through, which is, again, a reason for a lot of the change. So maybe I'm not like best place to give advice on a proper startup, but I mean, ultimately, try anything and everything, because there are no bad ideas. If it doesn't work, then you're in the same position as you were before anyway. I mean, I was prospecting into construction company and doing really, really targeted prospecting into these companies that I knew had very manual processes and I knew they had pains. And they were so old school that I could, they weren't on LinkedIn. Some of them didn't even have switchboards, like emails. I didn't know if they're delivering. So I just sent them all letters. Sent them all, like 15 to 20 letters out to these companies.
So just to confirm, are these handwritten letters or just physical letters you're sending them? Is that right?
Yeah, physical letters. So I printed off some letters and then I did some handwritten stuff at the bottom, signed it on, wrote my number on. It didn't work at all. I put so much time into it. I'm getting all this information from the companies and sent off these letters and I got nothing back from it. And then, but it doesn't matter, does it? I think the team will have appreciated that I was doing something different and working hard to try and book meetings. And it was a good experience. I'm 23, so I've not sent that many letters in my life.
But it's cool, trying things, thinking outside the box, right? Trying all these different things, failing, whether it works, whether it doesn't. And you're right, with some of the, I've worked with other SDRs that are working within the same space and industry and construction, it's very traditional. And like you said, these people might not be on LinkedIn. But, we've caught up recently and we heard things are starting to go really well for you. So what techniques are working for you as an SDR when it comes to prospecting, or what tips could you share to people that are, prospecting, say, on LinkedIn, emails, calls? What's working for you, Tom?
Yeah, so with that process that didn't work, what I was doing was finding companies that had a problem and then assuming that they'd want to fix it, which is a pretty bold assumption for construction companies. They love paper. They love paper-based processes. So I at the minute I'm focusing quite a lot on change events and specifically new job roles, so people that are kind of shifting into a new role, because those are the ones that are gonna shake it up. Maybe a company got a new CFO. I can go after the financial controller. Maybe they've been acquired, made some acquisitions. Maybe their turnover's doubled, something like that. These change events that are going to stimulate difference. But if I go to a financial controller and say, I know this process isn't very good, and I know you've already got the team in place, and I know that it's been the same for 15 years, you want to change, they're just like, nah, not really. I've got an audit to do or something.
Yeah.
There's got to be a change in the company, and that's what I'm really focusing on.
So thank you for sharing that insight. As you said, these change events or these kind of triggers and looking out for them, and where you've been tracking that success. And again, being a coach, I get to see the cool stuff that you get to do and the results, and super proud of you, dude. So things are going really good at Kefron. You're going really into the well into the role. And now I kind of want to segue a little bit to give a bit more insight into this sports life that you have. So, I've had coaching sessions with you where I've actually seen you at the boat club. I've seen you after being training and then telling me, Neil, I actually now have to go training after my SDR job. And I'm like, dude's like a machine. So tell us, what's the story with your sports in your life, how that looks, what you get up to, and then we can dive into a little bit deeper if that's all right.
Yeah. So I row at a club called Molesey Boat Club. It's one of the bigger clubs in the country. And I row on the club scene, so the domestic rowing against other UK clubs. I picked up rowing when I was at uni, so University of Surrey. Learned there as a beginner, and then sort of developed during my 4 years there, and then finished up and joined Molesey now to ultimately try and do as well as I can on the domestic scene.
Mm. And out of curiosity, what was it about rowing that like piqued your interest, like compared to like other sports?
To be honest, it was just the best one at the University of Surrey by a mile. It was the most high performance sport. They were the ones that were winning all the medals on the national stage. None of the other sports could really compete. And ultimately, I wanted to join a sport when I went to uni that was going to kind of develop me. I did athletics when I was kind of sort of between 16 and 18, and it was starting and I enjoyed it, but I was never in like that high performance environment. And I really wanted to find that. So that's kind of what
love
I
was doing. Well, like to somebody that I'm only a gym bro, so I don't know too much about high performance, but could you elaborate a little bit? What does high performance mean? And kind of like what other things come around high performance, Tom?
Yeah, I'd say the reason I describe it as high performance is because my sole focus when doing the sport is to perform to the highest level that I can. So whether that is making sure I'm getting all of the mileage in and a little bit more, or whether it is kind of reviewing and improving my nutrition, or whether it's doing yoga on a Sunday evening to make myself more flexible and robust. Everything is centered around performing to the highest level to achieve the best results that I can in the long run.
I love that. And, you know, tell us a little bit more about how, because like this is a very demanding life with your training that you have to do and dedicate to this whilst balancing an SDR job and learning all of that stuff. Talk us through like your typical training regime, like in the week. What's expected of you and what do you commit to?
Yeah, so what I'm ultimately trying to do is win an event called Henley Royal Regatta, which is raced every July and has done for years. And that's kind of the pinnacle of guest British domestic rowing. In order to do that, you need to do in excess of 130-140k a week of rowing, and then your S&C and your stretching and stuff around that. So in order to get that in, you need to train twice a day. So typically I'll do Tuesday to Sunday and have Monday off. And that's going to be maybe a 20k row machine session in the morning and then weights in the evening, or 16k on the water with some more high intensity stuff. Yeah, followed by some sort of top up in the evening. But generally, it's going to be a get a session in for work, eat as much as you can, get through my day, and then crack on again in the evening.
That is impressive and intimidating at the same time, not going to lie. And I can imagine that some of my listeners are like, so he does all of that and he does his SDR job. And the question that you're probably going to get asked is, how do you balance that? What's your response to that, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's I don't think I'd be able to pick it up. If I'd never done it before, I wouldn't be able to pick it up and do it straight away. And finally tuned and balanced from my time at university, and then slowly over the last sort of year and a half since I graduated. And I definitely got it wrong. Like, there's been like it's basically trying to balance as much training as you can without burning out. So, like I said, with like sort of optimizing nutrition, making sure I'm getting the right food in throughout the day, making sure I'm doing the right things to sleep well and early. So earplugs and an eye mask increases sleep quality. So being strict with the bedtime and making sure I've got those on make my sleep quality better. Things like that, you just have to be really, really disciplined, because when you're kind of treading that line of burnout, so finally, if I'm like, you know what, it's Thursday, I'm going to bin off the weight session.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll go have a few beers with the lads after work. Then all of a sudden, when I'm training on Friday morning, I'm absolutely wrecked. I've not had enough sleep, alcohol, my sleep quality.
Yeah.
And then there's nowhere to recover. I can't lie in on Saturday because I'm training. I need to perform then, and I can't. And then all of a sudden you're ill, and like you have to be really, really careful. And disciplined, and yeah, get good at saying no to social activities.
You have to make some sacrifice. I can imagine you'd have to make some sacrifices. And for somebody that isn't on your level of, you know, sports, for me, what's really important is diet. It's going to the gym in the morning. It's being getting my, you know, my solid 8 hours of sleep in. You know, also how I spend my weekends. And I've just celebrated my 40th birthday. But I didn't even have much to drink because I was thinking to myself, well, I've got podcast shit to do on my Sunday. I've got some editing stuff. I've got to get ready for my kid in the week. I've got coaching for this week. And I didn't want it to be, you know, too hammered to not be able to enjoy my Sunday because I've got stuff to do. Earlier this week, I had somebody DM me on LinkedIn. And they were just like saying niceties, like, how you doing there? I hope you're cool, da-da-da-da-da. And I said, all good. And I just said to him, how can I help you today? And he did say to me, he says, how have you been so consistent with posting and a podcast and the factors of running a business as well as being a father? And I didn't say it back to him, but I said, but also I'm a gym goer. I'm an MC. I'm a rapper. I'm a brother. I'm a son. I look after my family, my dad, and all of that sort of stuff. And I just said to him, good question. I asked myself that a lot of times as well, but I also put it down to time management. And, you know, planning my weeks in advance, knowing what's expected of me, knowing, okay, if I'm going to be going doing this, I need to get a good night's sleep the night before. You know, I do all my admin to make sure that when I'm in coaching or if I'm working, I can just roll with it. And I sent him a quick video and he just said to me, you know, honestly, not been much of a planner until this year. And more specifically around July when it came to the day-to-day activities. But what's really been a game changer for success is knowing exactly what you want to get done every day and then just having to execute on that, which, you know, 100% agree. But a question I'd love to come to you is because in a lot of my coaching sessions recently, Tom, people have come to me and said, Neil, it's September, you know, summer was awesome, back into the grind of things. I'm struggling to stay motivated, or, you know I need to be doing this, but I just can't get the discipline in myself to do it. How does Tom stay disciplined? And what do you do when there is a lack of motivation or you're feeling like, you know, you want to throw the towel in?
Yeah. So yeah, firstly, I completely agree that a plan is essential. I think if you don't have a plan in place, then you're never going to be able to get everything in. For me, I was pretty glad that summer was over and I could settle into to a rhythm again. And I think in terms of being consistent and you don't need motivation if it's a habit. So if I've trained for 6 weeks, like twice a day, then when I'm not motivated, it's just what I do. Like I need to wait for that time and crack on.
Yeah.
And I think it can be applied to pretty much everything, and I might have made this fact up in my head, to be honest, but I think it takes humans like 3 weeks to adapt to something new. So we move into a new house, it feels strange waking up in that new house. And then in 3 weeks, like you're kind of used to it.
Yeah.
Start of the season, it feels weird to be back to training this much, but in 3 weeks I'm used to it. And before I know it, like, everything is in routine. So you've got to really make sure you like force yourself for a few weeks and just make sure that you get into that
position, habit
where discipline isn't discipline, it's a habit.
I love that. You're right. I think they say like some, I don't know if these are official stats as well, but they say it typically takes 12 days to form a habit, but it takes 66 days for it to become ingrained and a natural part of your life. So it's like you said, like stick with it for a little bit as well. And something I read, I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago, where somebody was talking about, you know, how do you stay consistent? And the other person on the podcast was, when you force yourself to keep doing stuff, even when you're not enjoying it and you do it to the point that you're burning out, it's very dangerous. And some people think that's consistency, that you just push through the pain. But he said consistency is doing it every day and committing to it. So he said, you know, rather than pushing yourself to go to the gym every day and do an hour and a half workout, you're probably going to hurt yourself. But he said, as long as you're consistent of going to the gym, whether it's just 20 minutes for that day, or if it's 15 minutes for that day, or if it's just half an hour, but just getting to the gym, you don't have to pull or kill yourself to it. That's how you build the consistency. And motivation is always a topic like, Neil, I booked in a coaching session because I'm losing all motivation. And my first question to them is like, what's changed in your routine in the last week? What's sleep been like? What's food been like? And they're like, this has nothing to do with sales. And I'm like, well, whatever happens in your personal life will affect, you know, your working life as well. But it's finding out those changes. And then I kind of say to them, you know, nobody's motivated to go gym. Nobody wants to wake up in the morning and like leave that bed, especially now it's getting darker later and colder and everything like that. Nobody's motivated to go cook a healthy dinner or do that meal prep. but it tastes good when they've actually eaten it. So it's by taking the action of, if you just get to the gym, you have a decent workout, it makes you feel good that you think, actually, I want to go again tomorrow. That's how you get motivated. And it's the same with the meal prep. When you sit down to that nice spag bowl or whatever you've cooked and prepped and it tastes really good, you're like, do you know what I want to cook tomorrow? That's where it says action first, and then the motivation comes off the back of it. But how does that resonate with you, Tom?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. You're building sort of healthy habits, and when they're part of your routine, makes everything easier. There's no reason not to get to bed early. And like I said, there's a lot of parallels between high performance sport and high performance sort of professional individuals.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same. It's all the same, really. It's about being disciplined and consistent and constantly tweaking what you do. Like, so for example, if I'm fixing something in my nutrition in sport, I'll also be changing how I approach cold emails. I need to try and improve my process and how I spend my time. And it surprised me quite a lot when I got into sales how many parallels there were between the skills that I'd learned as an athlete and the skills that I'd need as an FDR, which I knew made it a lot easier.
I love that. And you know, I've met a lot of athletic people and that I've either worked with as the manager or we've had on this show, like another individual, Andy Laws, big into his sports, big into his cricket as well. And as you said, there's a lot of parallels. Do you feel there's been any transferable skills that you've taken from sports that help you in your day-to-day as an SDR today, Tom? And if so, what are they?
Most of my skills, to be honest. I could talk about them for a long time, but one of the big ones that I picked up pretty quickly was growth mindset. When I started as an SDR on the 26th of February this year, 2020.
He remembers the date. He's got it burnt in his mind. I love that guy. Tell me more.
And I think we have a big race in March time. And as one of our meetings go into that, we spoke about growth mindset and how important that is as an athlete to how you approach situations, how you frame them in your mind. And then on my onboarding at Kefron, or maybe it was with Nit, I can't remember, but we spoke a lot about growth mindset and how important of an attribute that is for SDRs. Resilience. I'm pretty used to dealing with
bad rejection.
Say no to my mate's birthday party because I've got to go training and then the next week get dropped from the boat that I want to be in. And then at the same time, I could be chatting to a warm lead for ages and I really need it to target. And I think it's going to be a great opportunity for the company. And then they leave the role or something like that. Or I get told to like fuck off on the phone and like...
Yeah.
I'm used to kind of dealing with those issues. Because I've faced them for years as an athlete as well.
I love that. Thank you for sharing. And that's another thing that I wanted to pick up on. So, you know, as athletes, there is this want to win, you know, to get those trophies, to get those medals, to have that recognition of really putting in that work. But I could also assume with athletes, there's a hell of a lot of loss because not everybody's going to be number one. Not everybody's going to win the race, etc. How do athletes deal with loss? The reason I'm asking this, because in sales, we're going to lose deals. We're going to lose prospects. We're going to lose confidence when somebody rips us a new one for telling us, like you said, fuck off on the phone or who the hell are you and why are you contacting me? Da-da-da. How do you deal with losses, Tom? And what advice would you give to people when they're going through those losses?
I'm well placed to answer this question because I've done a lot of losing. In rowing is in my other sports. Outside of basically the Olympics and World Championships, they usually only award a prize to the winner. So there's no silver and bronze medal. So you're a winner or a loser. So pretty much everyone is really used to losing in the sport. I think with losing, you need to appreciate it as part of the process. So not a single person ever is gonna win every race and not win every deal. you need to take learnings from it. And I think it's really important to have a really good team around you as well. So both at Molesey and within Kefron, it's a fantastic team environment. Another parallel between the two is that my coach always hops on about culture is key. That's the most important thing to making a boat club fast. And one of the first things they spoke about at Kefron, which I really, really like, is that they also believe culture is key. They have a phrase, because they say Hugo all the time, which means
Hugo.
Humility, unity, growth, and ownership. And that makes it really easy to accept losses, because everyone owns their losses and grows from it. And we lose as one and win as one. Every time a deal is won at any part of the company, there's a company-wide email goes out, and it's the same they lose as well. So if we lose an oppo, that'll go out to the whole company, and everyone, we win and lose together, and that's exactly the same.
Yeah, I love that. We win or lose together. Even if, ops lost, everybody knows. I freaking love that. And I'm really glad that you, because in my head, as I was hearing you, I was like, yes, what about the team? But you then said, the team with rowing and at Kefron, team's really important. What advice would you give to somebody to make sure they can be the best team player in their team? What advice, let me take a step back. I'm getting really excited now. What attributes does a good team player have, Tom?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think a good place to start would be Hugo. Humility, unity, particularly ownership. Admitting when you're right and wrong. I think it is a really, really difficult balance to get right, in that you have your own targets to hit, but also you are part of a team, and ultimately you're there to make the team perform well. And I think you always have to have the team at the forefront of your mind. So as an SDR, I want to book meetings, but ultimately I want the whole SDR team to hit target. In order to do that, you need to be really open, share all your ideas, good or bad. Share prospects, share wins, share losses, share learnings, and kind of become a bit of a hive mind. So it's only myself and Finn in the SDR team right now, and we speak every single day about prospecting. It's pretty cool. You get every single day about prospecting, and I know what he's thinking about prospects, and he knows what I'm thinking about prospects, and I'd be able to give his weekly update, because I know exactly what he's up to and processes and speaking to. So I think that's really important.
I love it. So you're all in the same boat. There's another pun for Neil. I love that. Awesome. So look, it's been really cool having you on the show today. A hell of a lot learned, and I've learned more sides to you as well. Before I hit with the typical question that I always ask my guests, I'm always curious to know, when Dad was talking to you at 10, and thinking, you ask a lot of good questions, you could work in sales. What does the family take as Tom working at a SaaS company? What's kind of the feedback from family on that one, Tom?
That's a good question. I think they're just happy that I'm doing well. They're happy that I'm in a job that I enjoy. I think I've tried to explain what I do to them, and they're kind of just like, yeah, nice. Sounds good. Yes. Sounds good. I'm glad you're enjoying it. I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad you're hitting target. And as I said, it sounds great.
I love that. Yeah, sometimes when I explain what we do, they don't get it. But as long as you're happy and you're doing well, then it's all good. So I love that. Okay. So the question that I like to ask all of my guests, Tom, if you could go back to the beginning, coming out of uni and maybe that business intelligent analyst, and he's on the cusp of starting his sales career, what three bits of advice would you give to a younger version of Tom?
Yeah, definitely do it. And when you do, just kind of go in like a bull in a china shop and just start swinging. Just do cold call early, as early as you can. The longer you leave it, the more daunting it is. On my second day, I was on the phone, and I think I'd done a crate. I did a lot of dials, and I was basically reading a script. And I got called. I said to someone, I was like, they asked me a question. I was like, it's like my second day. I don't really know, and they gave me an ultra crepidarian. I had to work out how to spell it, and then when I spell it, I could Google it, and it means someone trying to give advice to someone who doesn't even know what they're talking about themselves, which actually is pretty valid.
Yeah.
And I remember getting off the call, and I was like, oh my god, I've ruined everything. This is a really important prospect. And when I told the team, they just laughed and they're like, well, I wouldn't want to work with him anyway. Like, he's not a nice fella. And I've never heard from him again, never seen him again. So, like, I mean, I guess the point is that it's just a person on the end of a phone and there's a million prospects out there. So,
yeah,
get on the calls. If you mess it up, doesn't matter. It's development.
Indeed. I love that. It's development and there's always somebody else and there's always going to be an asshole on the other end. But they really went hard in with those that word. That's a bar, bro. Like, wow. Okay. Well, again, big thank you to our listeners, watchers, and audience. As a reminder, Tom's LinkedIn profile will be in the show notes. If you want to connect with him, pick his brain on any of the topics that we've discussed today, please reach out to him and give him a follow. And I thank you for joining us on this chapter. So again, if you're listening to this on your local podcast platform, Spotify, Apple, whatever that may be, make sure that you give us a rating and share this with somebody that you think could find this beneficial. And equally, if you're watching this on YouTube, give us a like, comment, and subscribe down below, because we need help with the algorithm to get more stories out there so that we can inspire or motivate other people in the world of SDRing and in the world of tech sales. So Tom, absolute pleasure to see you on board, sir. I will see you in our next coaching session, but I hope you have a blessed weekend and most importantly, happy selling, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. Loved it.